Good evening, this is Labor Exchange, and I'm Dennis Kreese, a member of the Boulder Area Labor Council, AFL-CIO. The subject of tonight's program is Women's History Month, Women, Labor, and Political Leaders. With us, as before, very special guest, Sarah Gallardi, union member, retired Service Employees International Union, Local 105. And also a former state representative at the Colorado State Legislature. Sarah, thank you again for being on Labor Exchange at KGNU.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
Sarah, again, like I always like to do with some background, how long have you been a union member with SEIU Local Union 105, and what kind of work did you perform in your employment?
Well, I've been a member of SEIU Local 105 for 36 years now. I've been retired for a little over 2 years, and I still continue to be a retiree of SEIU Local 105. And as a nurse, I've worked at Kaiser. I was very fortunate because we had a union contract that I was able to work in many, many departments. We had language that after you'd been in the department for 6 months, you could bid on another job, and it's like walking into a whole new world of medicine. I've worked in medical surgical units, and I've worked in pediatrics, family practice, trauma, orthopedics, dermatology, oncology, and then my last 2 years at Kaiser was in internal medicine. And before I moved here to Colorado from Iowa, I worked internal medicine and as a nurse's aide in a nursing home.
Impressive. So, like with all that work, could you discuss briefly some of the challenges involved with it?
Well, I think some of the challenges involved in nursing would be being short-staffed or not have, you know, along with short-staffing comes a lot of issues because you don't have enough nurses, maybe you don't have enough physicians, you don't have enough staff, and also some of the risks when you're a nurse are people who are sick or they're contagious, especially like, for example, right now with this pandemic of the COVID-19 virus. I mean, nurses and doctors, any person working in a medical facility or in a hospital, nursing homes, they're putting themselves at risk every single day, and that's why it's so important for them to wash their hands and to dress in protective clothing and things like that. And also, other risks we had was coming in contact with blood or bacteria, so certainly needed to be careful and, again, wash our hands, wear gloves, and if we needed to, protective clothing.
Sarah, what kind of and level of education preceded this profession for you?
As a licensed practical nurse in the state of Iowa as well as in the state of Colorado, it's a solid 1 year of college. And I say a solid 1 year because you don't get spring break, you don't get summer off, you don't get a long Christmas holiday. You go, we started school in August and went through to the end of May.
All right, then. Did you work while you were going to school?
Yes. When I was going to nursing school, I was had just graduated from high school, and so I still lived at home with my parents. And when I first started nursing school, I worked full-time as a nurse's aide, but as the studying got more harder, as well as we had a lot of clinicals, then I went to just working weekends, and then towards the end, before I graduated, then I just worked on Sundays.
Sarah, could you discuss union leadership positions you have held with SEIU Local 105 and any other labor organizations here in Colorado?
Sure. When I, as a member of SEIU Local 105, I was first initially, when I got involved, a contact action team person, or shortened, it's called a CAT. And so what my job was to help the stewards. So I would pass out information about upcoming meetings or about upcoming elections. And I would help register our members to vote. I would help the stewards get information out. I was also a union steward for many of the years, most of the years, actually, when I was with Kaiser and with SEIU. I was a member political organizer. I was president of our COPE committee, which is the Committee on Political Education. When we first put that group together in the early 90s, we had three of us, and after a couple of years, we ended up with 30 and then moved to 40. So we did a lot of great work, and I had a lot of wonderful help and many union members who joined us. I was also a member of our executive board for 10 years. And in 2000, when we created the what they called the Labor 2000 program, I took 6 months off from Kaiser and was paid by the union to help on elections. I was also fortunate enough to be on the bargaining committee for our union contracts 4 different times.
Sarah, are you satisfied with the number of women in union leadership positions? And if not, what needs to be done to change this paradigm?
No, I'm not satisfied at all. I think we need many more women in union leadership positions. I think we need to continue to educate women and to encourage them to work in leadership roles, such as stewards, becoming union presidents, and becoming more involved as international leaders. There's many classes and trainings that are available, and I think we just need to reach out to women in labor unions all across the country and let them know what's available to them, get them more involved.
Sarah, let's move on to this, women labor union leaders. Could you educate, inform this KGNU listening audience, especially our new and younger listening members, of the progress with women labor union leaders on the national, state, and local levels within the labor movement?
Sure. We have some absolutely incredible union women representing our union members, and certainly in my union, we have Mary Kay Henry. She's the international president of SEIU, which is absolutely incredible. And she started off, just like we were talking about, where she was a union member, then she started getting involved in union contracts, she started bargaining, she started organized, worked with hospitals in Florida, and she kept moving forward, became a president of her union, and then moved on and became very involved and is now our international leader. We also have Cindy Estrada, who's the vice president of the United Auto Workers, Karen Nussbaum, executive director of Working America, Rachel Bryan, who's a community liaison for International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 595, and of course, one of our most famous union leaders, Dolores Huerta. She's the co-founder of the National Farm Workers Association, which later became the United Farm Workers, and an incredibly dynamic leader who's been involved and active for many years is really becoming an uprising and should be noted leader of labor is Sarah Nelson. She's the international president of the Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, AFL-CIO. She's been a flight attendant since 1996, and she's over flight attendants. There are representing almost 50,000 flight attendants, and so she's really active and involved. And I'll tell you a real quick story with Sarah. Every year, we labor leaders in Colorado especially, but all around the country, go to the anniversary of the Ludlow massacre. And last year, Sarah Nelson was the prime speaker, and she came and spoke at the Ludlow massacre and the memorial, and she met with the many union leaders that were there all across Colorado, and she just invigorated the crowd. She had every person who had ever been involved or a leader in any labor union stand up and introduce themselves, and she just was just inspirational.
And before before we move on to the next question, 2 past guests on this show are kind of high up there in union leadership, and that would be, and you know both of them, Lisa Bolton. She's vice president of CWA in Washington, D.C.
She is.
And just recently, making history, Jose Jaramillo, president of Colorado AFL-CIO. And when I say she made history, she became the first Latina, the first women and then their first, gay, person to hold that position. And so she is right now a historical person in terms of that particular leadership position.
Absolutely, and she's doing a great job, and she is so active and involved all around Colorado and is really helping people and trying to organize and get more people involved in the labor movement. And, yeah, I agree with you. She's also doing a great job.
Sarah, how, just to finish up this section, how does this compare with the labor movement from 20, 30 years ago with all the, women labor leaders you mentioned?
Well, 20 to 30 years ago, this was definitely what we would call a man's world. And, you know, just like many jobs out there. And so it has just totally changed, I would say, 100%, where women have become more involved and have stepped up in leadership roles. And I think that over time and over the years that men have been able to see and other union leaders have been able to see what an intricate role that women can play. And so I think one of the many great changes in labor, in the labor movement that's gone on, is that men and women can work alongside each other, women in leadership roles, men in different leadership roles, but working together. And the most important role, of course, that we all have, as you know, Dennis, as union members, union leaders, is that we represent our membership. They're the most important thing.
That's a good segue to this one. How do popularly elected, appointed women for labor leaders greatly assist the level of union density throughout the U.S. and the state of Colorado?
Well, I think one of the many ways that they do that is that they get people to follow them, and they get women to follow them, which is one of the other reasons that we're seeing this great change in women leadership in labor. And they get them more involved and show them if they participate, if they become a part of the future, how much that they can make a difference and that they can be a part of this change. And organizing with the majority of women in the workforce, I think, sends a really strong message that women can raise a family, they can work, they can organize, and they can bring people together, teach us how to stand up for workers' rights, the right to collectively bargain, and certainly the right for equal and fair pay.
And that kind of finishes up what I wanted to prove, and you just said it. It definitely has a positive impact on organizing, especially with a majority woman workforce. So,
absolutely.
Sarah, let's move into some issues, critical issues for women labor leaders. And this gender equity pay gap. Could you discuss this issue and how it had a negative historical impact on all women workers in the private and public sectors?
Well, you know, with the gender equity and pay gap, women make less than men. And some women make 80 cents less on the hour than men do working in the same job. And all across the world, women experience this at, you know, at different levels. There, some women earn, 14 to 20% less than their males. And in six countries, we now have laws that protect women and they are paid equally to men. In Belgium, Denmark, France, Latvia, Luxembourg, and in Sweden. And there unfortunately are still 144 countries who experience the pay gap. And of course, we know that the pay gap worsens for women of color. Asian women are paid 80 cents on the dollar compared to men. Black women, 63 cents on the dollar. Native American women, 53 cents on the dollar. And Hispanic women, 54 cents.
Sarah, how has public policy and or legislation addressed this issue?
Well, I think public policy and legislation has made an incredible difference. When President Obama was first elected in 2008, one of the first things he did was to move forward with the Lilly Ledbetter legislation. And in states all across, in Colorado and all across the country, they are working every session on trying to change these policies through legislation to address this and to make it so that people understand what it means when men and women are working in the same job and not getting paid the same, and what a difference that can make on their paychecks.
With this issue, what are the advantages for all women working under a union collective bargaining agreement.
Well, that's an incredible advantage, because in most contracts and most, you know, union bargaining contracts, that language is there. It's in most of the time, if that, as long as that language is there, it's not even an issue. So whether you work in radiology as an x-ray tech or an MRI tech, if you're working alongside a man, you're both getting paid the same wage. If you're a nurse or you're a physician assistant or you're a janitor or you are working in the lab, whatever you're, or checking patients in, whatever your job is, men and women are paid the same.
Sarah, let's move on to the next issue, you know, serious issue, workplace discrimination and harassment. So again, could you explain detail this issue and its impact on all women workers, and what are some of the most egregious examples?
Well, I think that some of the most egregious examples would be certainly sexual harassment, LGBTQ harassment, and discrimination. Supervisors and managers are causing and creating these issues based on someone's sexual preference or someone's color, and they discriminate on many other issues as well, you know, whether that person is thin or they're overweight, or whether that person has children or doesn't have children. And I think that we have to continue to work every day to try to stop some of this harassment and discrimination. And when women are discriminated against or sexually harassed by their employer, their boss, their supervisor, manager, whatever that title is, then they feel threatened. So they're not going to stand up. They're not going to speak out. They're afraid. And so every day we need to work hard to make sure that this is stopped. And, you know, in a union environment with a collective bargaining agreement, we have a voice on the job, which enables us to meet with the boss and say, wow, we need to sit down and talk about this and why this is happening. And, you know, you can't do this.
Sarah, what needs to be done on the national, state, and local levels to effectively address, eliminate this issue?
Well, we need to pass legislation, and we need to continue to educate at all levels, from middle school all the way up, work with our communities and cities and states to change this mindset that, you know, discrimination is okay and that discrimination should not even happen. And we need to create this change by working together and by being involved and helping develop these policies.
Sarah, let's go into single working mothers' paid family leave. Could you give an update on this critical issue and how important it is for the single working mother workforce?
Absolutely. And as you know, Dennis, many years ago when I was raising two of my sons, I was a single mom. And it was very, very hard working and having the boys. But then when I started working at Kaiser and was in SEIU Local 105, I was given that benefit. That was part of my union contract, where I had paid sick leave. I could take time off if my children were sick or if I were sick. And so what happens is, when you have a single family, whether it's a mom or a dad or a grandparents, whoever's raising the children, then they're too afraid to stay home with a sick child. They're afraid they're going to get in trouble and written up by the boss, or they're not going to get paid. And so if you need to put food on the table, gas in your car, and be able to get to work every day, get your kids to school, you're not going to risk that. And so that, you know, that starts a whole tidal wave of events that happen. If you're sick and you go to work, you're going to get your coworker sick, and then you may not get better, and you may miss even more work. Or if your children are sick and you send them to school, you may get that call in the middle of the day and say, oh, you got to come pick up your kids. So I think it's a really tough issue. And right now in the state of Colorado, there are two pieces of legislation, paid sick leave and paid time off. And over the last 6 years, there have been bills to try to address this issue. And one of the first bills that came out was they were trying to create it so that employers would pay workers 6 days out of the year if they had to take a sick day for themselves or their children. And then they came back, and that didn't pass, unfortunately. And so they've come back to the table, you know, every year since then. And so they're working really hard into trying to address, you know, this issue through legislation. And the policy, you know, is really tough, but they're working with businesses and with companies and corporations and trying to get in the middle and be collaborative about, because that's an impact on businesses as well. So they're working hard on that.
Sarah, as a former state representative, what are some of the obstacles presented that that prevents passage of this important legislation? You mentioned a few, but any others?
So another obstacle would be certainly lobbyists. If you have lobbyists who agree with the work that you're doing, then they help you to get that legislation passed and talk to people and can be a really big help. Or lobbyists, you know, can talk to people and let them know that they don't think that your legislation is good at all. And if you're, when you're elected as a state representative or a state senator or any political role, your job is to represent your constituents. So you may have some people who want you to pass legislation, but when you hear from your constituents and they say, no, that's not something that we support, then you have to listen to your constituents. So that makes it tough when you're trying to pass legislation to make things better. And certainly money is a huge factor. If you have a large fiscal note and it maybe won't pass. And then unfortunately, a lot of times people are given the wrong or misleading information, either through mailings or letters or through TV or ads. And so I think a lot of times what was a big obstacle was that people just didn't understand the issue. And they're hearing from so many other groups and other people that they just are like, well, I'm just going to vote no.
As we said before, how do many union collective bargaining agreements address this issue?
This issue of the paid leave?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty...
Most bargaining contracts have language in their contract about how much sick leave you're able to take. And if also you have the national family medical leave, but that doesn't pay you. So in a bargaining contract, like I said, you do get sick leave, but you also can get education leave. You can, you know, a lot of contracts will help you facilitate, you know, disability leave. And also in a union contract, when you have sick leave, it also lists who you can take off to take care of. If it's not yourself or your child, sometimes contracts will have language that say, well, you can be off to take care of your grandmother or grandfather or a cousin or your parents. And so that helps a lot of people if they're able to take that time off to take care of a loved one.
Sarah, we have about 5 minutes at most. So I want to get into women labor / political leaders. When were you elected as a state representative for the Colorado State Legislature? And what kind of legislation did you initiate on behalf of all workers and their families?
Well, I was fortunate to be elected in 2006, and I was reelected in 2008 and then did not win my election in 2010. So I had the incredible opportunity of being a state representative for 4 years. I was on Business Affairs and Labor Committee, local government, and Health and Human Services. So, and some of the legislation I was fortunate to pass, I would say one of the many pieces of legislation was was able to work on a Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which is the SNAP program, and, you know, helping families who need assistance to be able to get that assistance. So we put a lot of funding towards that, which helps schools and food banks, and just was an incredible resource for people. I also passed legislation to sunset off-label use of cancer drugs. where there were a lot of rules and I guess rules and policy that was in place that said that, you know, talking about cancer medication, if it's not this way or if it's not written this way, then people can't try it. And so we worked really hard with some oncologists and physicians and some other nurses to make it so that if a cancer drug comes out and it's only in IV form, and that's the only, which is intravenous, and that's the only way that your insurance company will pay for that, if the market changes and they're able to create it so that's an oral medication, then that should be covered by your insurance.
Sarah,
we also, go ahead.
I want to just continue here because, like I said, we have about 2 minutes, if that.
Okay.
Just finish this up. How important is it for union women workers to pursue public office, and what kind of long-term positive impact can their election greatly assist women workers and all workers and their families?
Well, I think it's incredibly important for union members to run for office. Like in my case, as a union member, I learned so much about our membership, and I was, you know, put into leadership positions. I was elected into leadership positions. And so through that really helped me as a politician so that I could understand and learn to reach out to people and be more involved. And so when women who are in labor go into work and are elected into, whether it's a municipality, city council, a school board, or a state representative, senator, or even the United States Congress, United States Senate, then they have that experience of the work they've done with labor. And they also have that understanding of the so many issues that affect working families and members of unions.
And at this stage in your life, my life as well, and me being a little bit older, but both of us are dues-paying members to the Colorado Alliance for Retired Americans, a primarily union retiree senior organization. And I'm just going to read this, and then I'll have a final question beyond this. Is that you and Mona Moffitt are lobbyists for the Colorado Alliance for Retired Americans at the state capitol. I'd ask you for an update. We don't have that much time. But I do know that both of you do great work that benefits union retired women workers and all workers and their families. So, you know.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
So you have about 1 minute, and I always like to ask this because I appreciate you being on the show as before. Do you have any final thoughts or comments for this KGNU listening audience in the context of tonight's subject? Women's History Month, which is March, women, labor, and political leaders.
Yes, I do. I mean, I think I'd like to leave with a couple of quotes from some women, labor leaders and women involved that I truly admire. And the first one is Ruth Bader Ginsburg, one of the Supreme Court justices. She's had an incredible impact on our country for many, many years. And she also is the co-founder of the Women's Rights Project of the ACLU.
You're going to have to be brief.
And one of the quotes that's I really admire her for, women belong in all places where decisions are being made. We shouldn't be that women are the exception.
All right. Then, Sarah.
And then another woman I admire, Dolores Huerta, and a wonderful quote from Dolores Huerta is, organized labor is the only way to have fair distribution of wealth.
So thank you for being on the Labor Exchange at KGNU, Sarah Gagliardi. This has been the Labor Exchange, and I am Dennis Kreese for KGNU Community Radio.